This is the Quality News Network. Fidel Castro has temporarily and for the first time in his dictatorship ceded power to his younger brother, 75-year-old Raul. The Cuban president, who is 80, is recuperating from surgery. In Miami, anti-Castro Floridians are celebrating. In Iraq, the daily violence continues. More than 70 people were killed today in and out of Baghdad. The death toll includes an American and a British soldier and 20 Iraqi troops. On Capitol Hill, Democratic leaders in the House and Senate joined 10 other congressional Democrats, urging President Bush to begin withdrawing U.S. troops from Iraq by the end of the year. In southern Afghanistan, at least two British NATO soldiers were killed today in an ambush. Yesterday, NATO took over control of the area from U.S.-led coalition forces. Israel is expanding its ground offensive into southern Lebanon. Heavy bombing has been resumed. Israel claims to have killed 300 of an estimated 2,000 Hezbollah guerrillas in the past 3 weeks. Hezbollah says the figures are much lower. Iran has rejected the UN Security Council resolution demanding Tehran abandon uranium enrichment by August 31st. Sanctions have been threatened. In Asia, for the first time in a year, North and South Korean troops have exchanged gunfire across their heavily fortified border. Nearly 60 major wildfires are burning out of control in the West, stretching crews and equipment to the limit. For the first time in 3 years, federal land management agencies are being asked to make more employees available to fight the blazes. An excessive heat warning has been issued by the National Weather Service for cities throughout the Midwest and East. U.S. scientists say July may be listed as the warmest since record keeping began in 1895. A storm warning has been issued for the Caribbean islands for Tropical Storm Chris. A storm watch is out for Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. British Prime Minister Tony Blair and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger today held a press conference to announce an agreement bypassing the Bush administration and working toward reducing global warming. Both the UK and California have suffered through record high temperatures this summer. In Mexico City, the business center is paralyzed by protesters demanding a recount of last month's presidential election. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Commerce Department reports consumer spending, a key measure of inflation, rose in June at its fastest pace in more than a decade. The department cited rising gas prices. Northwest Airlines flight attendants rejected a contract, cutting pay and benefits by more than 20%. The airline says it's going ahead with the cuts starting today, a move that could trigger a strike. Eastman Kodak is posting a second quarter net loss of $282 million. The company is also eliminating another 2,000 jobs. Sirius Satellite Radio is reporting a wider loss for its second quarter as the company continues to build its subscriber base. The $238 million loss is in line with analysts' expectations. And Fox News has reached a $250,000 settlement with four women who claim they were sexually harassed at the workplace. Today, light sweet crude was $74.91 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold was trading at $659.50 an ounce. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down about 60 points. The NASDAQ was down 29. The S&P 500 was down 6 points. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, mean strike. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean cry.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Freer America. And today on the program, we're going to be talking about exactly what makes a free America. You know, our good friend John Fox there just mentioned the telephone numbers to you. Today I've got a couple of guests on, and we will slide some phone calls on in the middle of all that, in the middle of those two guys. Today I will have with me Spencer Overton, who is a professor at George Washington University Law School and also the author of a book entitled Stealing Democracy, The New Politics of Voter Suppression. I've had Spencer on the program once before when I was at the Taking Back America conference. Actually, the debut program of this particular incarnation of my radio career. And wonderful guest. I cannot express more about how amazing this book is. And he gave me a copy of the book. I was able to come home and read it after that conference, and I sat down and read it cover to cover. Quite amazing book. You can go to stealingdemocracy.com if you want to take a look at that before we have him on the air around the 5:30 hour. Now, another guest that I have on the radio program today is a gentleman by the name of Alan Deckert. Alan is the executive director of an organization called the Open Voting Foundation. And, he's the president of the Open Voting Foundation. And they had a press release yesterday in which they disclosed a huge security flaw in Diebold, in a particular Diebold voting machine. So we will have him on today. We're going to be talking about democracy, the privatization thereof, and how, even if it's not privatized, how it can be stolen, used, manipulated. What was the other word I used? Oh, yes, traded. Politicians today operate under a different paradigm than politicians of yesteryear. Today we have, today we have voting districts in the United States. And in these voting districts, the congressional districts, you will find them to be shaped very strangely. For instance, the one that I am in right now in North Carolina, in Greensboro, North Carolina, actually encompasses part of Greensboro and a little strip of land that connects this place with Raleigh, North Carolina, which is an hour and a half to the east. And part of Raleigh is in that same congressional district. It's the 13th district, and Brad Miller, Democrat, thank God, is my congressman. Fantastic congressman. But my point is that there are the districts that are out there, which are created through the United States Census, which is taken every 10 years, and the population density is looked at and blah, 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 and they create and change and shape districts in states as a result of the census. districts often do not represent any kind of realistic shape or geographical boundary. They represent primarily the people who reside within them. And the latest thing with Texas about them redrawing the districts, you know, even before the census, was a classic example of how democracy can be subverted by the politicians themselves and not using voting machines or not using other methods such as purging voter rolls, such as happened today. I'm looking for the story right now. In a Republican district, let's see here. Yes, here we go. As what happened in Marion County, Indiana, you know, it really blows my mind. In an emergency meeting Monday, the Marion County Election Board sided with Republicans who were concerned about potential voter fraud due to people registered in more than one location and deceased voters who were never taken off the books. The election board voted 2-1 in favor of allowing Republicans to continue purging names. The controversy began Friday when Republicans started removing the names of voters they thought were ineligible. The names came from a list supplied by a vendor contracted by the Secretary of State's office that indicated that about 36,000 Marion County voter registrations were questionable. Republicans were certain that about 4,500 of those names should be purged immediately. The purging of additional names is also being considered. Now, I wonder if they're going to actually try to do anything about contacting these people, finding out if they're still alive or if they're eligible to vote. Probably not. And who is the contractor, I wonder? I wonder if it's Choice Point. We've talked about Choice Point before. You know, bottom line is today we're going to be talking about democracy. Now, here in the United States of America, democracy is, and the way that we go about electing our elected officials should be sacred, should be sacrosanct. We should not have politicians monkeying around with the process. Why? Because they are ethically incapable of being objective when it comes to our democracy. Their very jobs depend on what we decide to do. So if you think about things along those lines, they should be the last people in the world. Republicans or political parties should be the last ones who should be monkeying around with voter rolls, should be monkeying around with congressional districts. They shouldn't be monkeying around with whether or not voting machines that are electronic or not should be used. They shouldn't be making those decisions. You and I should be making those decisions. We should be making those decisions in nonpartisan ways. Now, here in the state of North Carolina, we have a voter-verified bill in effect. It's called the Voter Confidence Act, I believe. I could look that up. You can go to ncvoter.net and find out what we did here to bring about a verified voting balloting. And I tried it out recently. We had a primary election. I went and voted in the primary. And sad to say, as has happened quite a bit in the last few years, my candidate lost. But, hey, I got to vote. The cool thing is, when I voted, I was able to look over to the right-hand side and see my choice printed up on a piece of paper that had a unique identifier along with it that proved that the person that I voted for was indeed the person that was chosen. Now, I've heard a lot about these machines, and we'll talk about them later on in the program with Alan Deckard, but you know, what's really what I'm happy about is that at least in this state, a citizen-led effort not only took off, but was followed to its logical conclusion, and the citizens got what they wanted. And I think that's amazing, especially when it comes to voting, because you know that the politicians themselves, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, I'm not going to, you know, hey, there's been plenty of monkeying around on both sides of the aisle. But the politicians themselves would choose the one that they would think would give them the vote. I say choose the company or choose a method of voting that doesn't privatize it, that doesn't depend on some guy's software who says it'll work a certain way, and then it turns out they're working a completely different way, and we've lost thousands upon thousands of votes. But that's just me. I don't know anything. Anyway, it's great to be with you on this Tuesday afternoon. It's about 155 degrees outside. It sure feels like it, I'll tell you. Here in North Carolina, it's very damned hot. It's about 15 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this voting situation, and then we'll have Spencer Overton on. If you want to get in on the show, you can do that by dialing 1-877-443-2366, or you can email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll be right back.
Must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart. Closer to the heart. Blacksmith and the artist reflected in their art. They forge their creativity closer to the heart. Yeah, closer to the heart.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here are some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
And you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 20 minutes past the hour here on a very, very hot summer afternoon in the Northern Hemisphere. I've got a few items that I wanted to cover before we get over to the interview with Professor Spencer Overton. We're going to be talking about this in a few minutes, but it really is amazing to me. I'm looking back over the book again, and it really is amazing to me how the redistricting, the inequality from county to county with regard to voting, felon disenfranchisement, how race still matters. I mean, it's all these different issues that are directly related to elections and voting in our democracy. And really, it is amazing to me. And, you know, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, the purging of voters, you know, that's another huge deal. Now, anti-fraud measures, for instance, that and we'll probably talk with Professor Overton about this when he comes on. But, Georgia now has a photo identification as a requirement to vote. Actually, Indiana as well. I'm just reading this now. Half the states do not request documentary identification, but most states allowed, some sort of identification to vote, non-photo to vote, such as a utility bill or a bank statement or some such. And what this does is it essentially creates a hoop through which to jump to prove that you are who you say you are. For instance, the financial burden of providing an underlying documentation to obtain a government issue photo ID, even though Georgia says it will issue them for free, how are they going to prove that you are who you say you are? Well, let's say you're from New Orleans, Louisiana, and you've lost your birth certificate in the middle of the flood. You've lost your birth certificate, you've lost your Social Security card, you've lost pretty much everything that's going to prove that you are who you say you are. So now you're turning around, you're having to buy certified copies that may cost anywhere from $10 to $45, depending on the state. You've got to jump through all these hoops in order to get this photo ID. And I'm going to be honest with you. How many people who have lost everything are going to be so worried about their vote that they're going to go rush right out and figure out how to go about getting their vote back? We need to, in this nation, make it so easy to vote that all you need to do is really answer your mail, check a box, and stick it back in the mail. That's what I believe. Sign your name to it, and then people can compare that to a computer-generated signature that they already have on record when you signed up to vote. And it's that simple. I mean, there's any number of ways we could make it simpler than how we do now. Now, the interesting thing is that those who would want to steal your vote obviously would want to make it more difficult for you to get to the poll. Historically, as I've heard before, Republicans benefit from lower voter turnout. Historically, Republicans benefit from lower voter turnout. So if there's a way that can be devised to keep you from showing up at the polls, guess what happens? And if you have the means to go about getting a voter ID card, then chances are if you don't have the means, if it's more important to you to spend that $20 on food or medicine or some other life expense than it is to get you a copy of your birth certificate and you sit out the election, then guess what happens? You have been, ding, you've been disenfranchised. Excuse me. So, we have a situation where that's brewing, all right? The other thing, the other big deal, is that many of our citizens now, let's put it this way. The numbers of Latinos who were officially able to vote in our country quadrupled in 12 years from 1992 to 2004. Okay? And it's quite possible, according to the 2000 census, more than 8 million Americans age 18 or over admit to speaking English less than very well. Of that group, 4.5 million speak a form of Spanish, and 1.6 Asian or a Pacific, or excuse me, 1.6 million Asian or Pacific Island language. So, bilingual ballots is another way to reach out to a voting population, okay, to try to garner more votes, to try to get more people to participate in democracy rather than using ways to limit democracy. You know, it is absolutely repugnant that we see situations still where these various places, such as Marion County, Indiana, as of today, purge these voter rolls without even giving it a public meeting or any kind of, publicly open scheduled meeting. Apparently, the election board that voted in favor, 2-1 in favor of allowing Republicans to continue purging names, well, they did it in an emergency meeting. Of course, we have to do this now. We have to rush it through before anybody gets catches a wind or understands that this is what we're doing. Because if they catch us, well, then it'll be too late. Kyle Walker, the Republican co-director of the registration board, said, quote, "Had we not begun the process on Friday, we would not be able to get the job done." Oh, there's a deadline? Huh. The emergency meeting was so-called necessary because the voter registration board is required by state law to fix all potential voter registration problems by Wednesday. Okay, so essentially, you know, what? Can you say, let's create an emergency? Let's create. Let's wait to the last minute and then drop a bunch of names off of the rolls, and not notify those people, so that when they go to show up to the polls in November, they're not there. Ah, drives me up the wall. You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. When we come back, we should have Spencer Overton on, Professor Spencer Overton of George Washington University. If you want to get in on the show later on, you can do that. 1-877-443-2366. I'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. George Bush is deaf. He's deaf to the suffering of the Lebanese people, and it's a deafness heard round the world. After Israel killed at least 57 civilians, 34 of them children, in Qana, Lebanon on Sunday, there was Bush on Monday happily going to a fancy bakery and to Jones Stone Crab House down in Miami. This is not the comportment you'd expect from the President of the United States when there's a huge crisis on his hands. But he doesn't do crisis management. He showed us that before. Instead, he keeps repeating the mealy-mouthed words about wanting a sustainable ceasefire, which everyone knows means, Israel, you can keep killing for now. In Florida, Bush said, America is opposing the forces of terror in the Middle East. Yes, Hezbollah is a force of terror, but Israel is a force of terror, too. There's a thin line between stubbornness and callousness, and Bush has crossed that line. And there's a thin line between standing by an ally and being complicit in that ally's war crimes. And Bush has crossed that line as well. He said he's laying the foundation of peace for generations to come, but he's exploding that foundation, just as sure as Israel exploded that building in Qana. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to naja.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. Naja, raising the next generation of storytellers.
I can feel no sense of measure, no illusions as we take refuge in young man's pleasure, breaking down the dreams we make real.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 33 minutes past the hour here on the eastern coast or the eastern side of the United States. And joining me from his undisclosed location is Professor Spencer Overton, and he is the author of a new book called Stealing Democracy, The New Politics of Voter Suppression. Spencer is a law professor at George Washington University Law School, where he specializes in voting rights. He's also served on the Jimmy Carter James Baker Commission on Federal Election Reform, which was co-chaired by former President Jimmy Carter and former Secretary of State James Baker. He has issued a blistering dissent from the commission's report, arguing that one of the reforms was much more likely to cause harm to democracy than to help it. He's also a member of the boards of Common Cause, Demos, and the Center for Responsive Politics. And also, if you're interested in checking out the book that he's written, Stealing Democracy, you can go to stealingdemocracy.com and follow along. Spencer, welcome to the show.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you back on. I know you were on, I think it was the first one that I did of this particular program, and there at the Taking Back America conference in Washington. You know, I was just, before we get going too far, I was just covering a story. I don't know if you were listening or not, but I was covering a story out of Indiana, Marion, Indiana, where the election board has approved the GOP purging of voter rolls there. And, you know, I know we had talked about this at one time before, but tell me, what is is this one of the tactics that can be used to limit the participation in democracy?
It certainly is, Bruce. And you know, we've seen this for a while. Indeed, it became big in the 1960s. You remember with the Barry Goldwater campaign when they started to really challenge voters. And if they ended up excluding legitimate voters, it wasn't a problem to them because they felt as though they were targeting areas that were not supporting their particular candidate. So it is a significant problem in terms of the purging, in terms of the challenging. And, you know, we really do need to have elections that are fair and that certainly have integrity. But what often happens is that these purges, these attacks on individual voters, end up excluding and shutting out legitimate voters. And Wisconsin, right, for example, Republicans had a press conference to announce that they'd found 9 people who double voted in other states. Well, in fact, the Republican U.S. attorney looked into it. All 9 claims were false. All of the people had the same names but were actually different people who lived in these different places. So often we have misguided attempts under the guise of fighting fraud, but what happens is that partisans attack voters in areas where the areas tend to vote against the party. So, for example, Republicans might challenge people in a heavily Democratic area or a heavily African-American area where voters tend to vote Democratic, and they generally don't challenge voters in their own base. The objective is not to prevent fraud. The objective here is to exclude voters.
Tell me about the book Stealing Democracy.
Well, Bruce, politicians control America by manipulating election rules. We talk a great game about exporting democracy in this country, but in fact, the people are not in control. Too often, politicians use devices like redistricting and a variety of barriers to voting to determine who votes and whose vote counts. Voters don't always choose politicians, but too often politicians choose voters by manipulating these election rules.
When we talk about exporting democracy, is the democracy that we're exporting the one where we can manipulate it? Or
what's funny about that, Bruce, is when we export democracy to a place like Iraq, Iraq has an independent commission that administers elections. It doesn't have a Catherine Harris, who's the chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Florida, or a Ken Blackwell, who's the chair of Bush-Cheney in Ohio. They have an independent election administration. And let me point out, you know, it's not just Republicans who engage in these things. Certainly Democrats do as well. Howard Berman, a good Democrat from California, his brother, redrew the districts in California. And Michael, his brother, reduced the number of Latinos in Howard's district from 45% down to 31% so that Howard wouldn't face a Latino Democratic challenger. So it's not just a Republican problem or a Democratic problem. Often it's a problem of entrenched political power that really doesn't want to defer to the will of the voters and the will of the people, and actually goes out of its way to manipulate rules in a way that will allow it to entrench itself.
I was going to mention that at one point in our interview. It seems like to me that the major problem right now isn't that one party over the other one, even though there are different tactics on both sides, but that there seems to be more of a problem with elected power versus unelected power.
Yeah, I think that's
power.
Right. Certainly people who have power, and one of the problems we have right now is entrenched are the ones who are calling the shots with regard to election law, and I think that's absolutely right. Incumbent power versus voters, and that's probably more important than Republican versus Democrat. It's probably more important than black versus white. This notion of incumbent power versus average voters, that's really the divide we're talking about.
How did, and that's just, you know, sort of following that line of discussion, you know, Texas recently redrew their districts in the middle of a cycle rather than waiting for the census. How are they able to get away with that?
That's absolutely right. Usually you'll know that districts are drawn just after the census so that they are drawn in a way that they have equal populations. Okay. In Texas, though, districting was done in the middle of the decade solely to pick up political power. Tom DeLay orchestrated that redrawing, the redrawing of the districts, and it enhanced the Republicans' party, the Republican Party's power there. The problem with that is that the matter went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court basically said they didn't want to get involved in it, and they defer to the politicians. And the problem with that, and it was a huge win for politicians and a big defeat for voters of all parties, the problem with that is that it opens the floodgates to political manipulation and political payback by Democrats in Illinois, New Mexico, and Louisiana, where Democrats control the government. Also, Bruce, if your poll numbers are down and you're a politician, why not just redraw the lines just before the election in order to maintain power? So it really is a problem that will threaten us in the future and will continue to take power away from average American voters.
It is absolutely, you know, and I looked at this, you know, the situation down there, and the other thing that they did was they actually, I think it was one district that the Supreme Court did have an issue to, or take issue with one that was a Hispanic majority district.
That's right. So basically the Republicans were trying to protect Henry Bonilla, and they removed 100,000 Latino voters from his district. So even though Bonilla is Latino, the Latino voters were voting against him, and he was a Republican. So what they did is they removed 100,000 Latino voters from his district to protect him. The court there said it was a violation of the Voting Rights Act, and I think the court was right in its assessment. For me, though, I think that it's important to protect voters of color, minority voters. That's certainly critical, and that needs to be key. But it's also important to protect all voters in Texas and all Americans from political manipulation. And unfortunately, the court fell down on the job with that.
Right. Let's take a walk back a year and a half to the presidential election. What do you think? Let me ask you this, just point blank. Do you think John Kerry won Ohio?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know in terms of the data. I do know that Kerry lost by about 118,000 votes, and maybe there were probably about 275,000 votes that were lost as a result of machine problems, registration barriers, long lines. So I do think that there are a large number of people who were excluded. Now, the question is, would Kerry have won enough of those votes to win the election? And I think that that's a difficult thing to say. But I will say this, Bruce, that, you know, one problem with focusing on Kerry or Bush here is that, you know, we're focusing on political elites here. And this really has to be not about was some candidate wronged or whatever. It's about average voters being wronged, regardless of whether or not Kerry would have won. I think we have to have the same zeal in protecting voters. Too often politicians say, well, it wouldn't have made a difference, and therefore, so what? We excluded you. So what? We suppressed your vote. And we need to reject that thinking and say, no, you know, we need to protect every American's vote. It's fundamental.
Well, yeah, I find it to be kind of interesting. I mean, you know, John Conyers came out and pretty much believes that it was stolen. I guess, or you know, I guess that's the language that he used, isn't it? But you know, well, I mean, you know, and there's a lot of other issues that were documented there. I guess the question I would have would be with regard to that: what could have been done differently to protect the vote, and so that it wouldn't have been so that, because we've had two presidential elections in a row,
right,
where we've looked at the systems that have been in place in these various locations, and they are suspect enough that it makes you want to start asking questions. What can be done to create a system that would work without a questioning of the results?
No, that's absolutely right. Well, the first thing we need to do is we need independent people, independent commissions or administrators to administer the election. Ken Blackwell, you know, he just received $10,000 from Diebold, and he was the chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign. And we really have to have impartial election administrators, not only on the state level, but also on the local level. So that's the first thing we need to to do. The second thing we need to do is we need to really audit these election offices and these private vendors that supply machines. Now, in Ohio, you remember, most of the machines were antiquated punch card machines, and that was a problem, and certainly those types of machines need to be replaced. But we also need to audit those old machines as well as new machines, these electronic machines, to ensure that they're not problematic. People have said that we need a paper trail, and I understand that. I appreciate that. I think that's a first step, but I think we need more. We need real audits of these companies that provide these machines as well as the procedures that are used. We can't, for example, as happened in California recently, we can't have people taking home electronic voting machines overnight. I mean, that's just unacceptable. So we need those types of procedures. We also need to get rid of registration barriers, Bruce, and adopt Election Day registration. That's currently the law in several states like Minnesota and Wisconsin, and we need that nationwide. We've got the technology now. There's no reason that people shouldn't be able to vote when they go to the polls, or register, rather, when they go to the polls on Election Day. We also need to have federal funds, more federal funds, so we can have enough election machines. You remember in Ohio, there were long lines. In Columbus, Ohio, for example, officials knew they needed 5,000 machines. They made do with only 3,000. They moved machines from urban areas out into suburban areas, and Tanya Thivner waited 4 hours to vote in line. Her mother in a suburb only waited 15 minutes. So we need to do a lot better in terms of ensuring that the resources are there, it's open access, and preventing manipulation. Those are the keys.
Is there no federal standard presently in place that says that, you know, per population in this particular precinct, you know, for every voter, for every 10 voters, you have to have a machine, or for every 30 voters? I mean, is there no standard that sort of requires that?
Bruce, there is not a standard. One of the problems we have here is that your right to vote depends on where you live. We've got 4,600 different election systems. All of them have different rules, different practices. Some have, one machine for every 50 voters, and others have one machine for every 400 voters, resulting in very long lines. This disparity is a result of the lack of federal standards. We have these huge disparities, and people don't have an equal opportunity to cast a vote. So I do think it is important to have some federal standards so we can have some uniformity and a baseline here. Four-hour lines are unacceptable. Starbucks and McDonald's, they wouldn't make you wait 4 hours in line. They'd go out of business if they did that. Voting is at least as important as a quarter pounder or a Frappuccino.
I hear you. Well, I agree. Well, I don't know about the Frappuccino. No, I
agree. At least not on a hot day, maybe, huh?
That's right. Now, what about felons? I mean, there are a number of or several states that actually keep felons from voting for life. I mean, is there a movement afoot to overturn that, or has this been something that's steadily going away? And if you have any historical information on that, I'd love to hear it too.
You know, it's a huge problem in terms of people who have committed felonies and served their time not being able to vote. It really falls outside of international norms. Right now, we've got three states in the United States that are the worst: Virginia, Florida, and Kentucky. And in those places, everyone who's committed a felony, even if they haven't gone to prison, everyone is prevented from voting for life even after they've served their sentence. Now, those three states are alone with Armenia as the only democracies in the world that disenfranchise everyone who's committed a felony for life. So we're really outside of international norms in those places. And then there are some other states that are pretty problematic, that disenfranchise a large number of people, not all, not maybe the white-collar criminals, right? But it disenfranchised a large number, you know, the nonviolent drug offender, or some others are disenfranchised. And it's a real problem. In a place like Virginia, for example, you've got 300,000 people, 5% of the state's population, basically. They can't vote as a result of a felony conviction, and that equals basically 25% of the black men in that state who can't vote as a result of a felony conviction. And the origin of those laws came from Jim Crow officials who essentially felt as though these laws, these lifetime laws, would exclude African Americans from the polls, along with poll taxes and grandfather clauses and literacy tests. That's the origin of these laws in many areas like Virginia. Unfortunately, the former governor of Virginia, Mark Warner, had an opportunity to restore voting rights to 300,000 people, and he chose not to. The governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack, did have the opportunity, and he actually did restore voting rights to people who had completed their sentences in that state. And really, there are certain people who benefit from excluding folks from the polls. For example, George Bush won by 537 votes in Florida, but he would have lost by 30,000 votes had people who had completed their sentences, all their probation and parole, had those people simply been allowed to vote, George Bush would have lost by 30,000 votes. So there's certain people, certain politicians who benefit, and this keeps it in place. And then there are other politicians who are too timid, who are afraid of a Willie Horton ad, or who are afraid of being perceived as too liberal, who really are frankly too weak to stand up for voting rights, which is why we can't rely on politicians to protect our voting rights, why we need to stand up, because either some politicians are too weak, and then other politicians actually politically benefit from excluding particular populations.
You know, I think it's absolutely, you know, repugnant that we would look at how can we exclude people from voting. And I think that, you know, surely that is the topic of some strategies. I mean, I can't help but think that there are those that benefit, as you said, more from folks not being able to vote. We're also dealing in an era right now with folks who are not naturalized, or who I shouldn't say, who are not natural-born citizens. And with that brings issues such as issues of language.
Right.
How does that exclude folks?
Well, what's interesting about this, and we just had a big debate on this with regard to bilingual ballots in renewing the Voting Rights Act, is that, you know, people say, well, hey, if you come to this country, you should be able to speak English, and therefore voting should be in English. What's interesting, Bruce, is that bilingual ballots is not an immigration issue. 70% of the people who use bilingual ballots are born in the United States. I mean, I think it's very difficult to tell the American Indian who chooses to respect his tribal heritage and language that person can't vote for president, even though his ancestors have been here for thousands of years. And also, many of these people who use bilingual ballots, they know English. It's just they feel much more comfortable voting in their first language, their primary language. Also, Bruce, some people say bilingual ballots, they divide America. They'll balkanize America, Tower of Babel, they claim. But, you know, that's wrong. The facts show that's wrong. If you look at Lawrence, Massachusetts, Bruce, before bilingual ballots, the schools were 70% Latino, but there weren't any Latinos on the school board. The mayor ignored and scapegoated Latinos in Lawrence, Massachusetts. There were riots, and the Latino community was isolated. But after bilingual ballots, the school board and the city council became integrated. There were real coalitions between Anglos and Latinos. And also, Bruce, the mayor started to listen to everyone in the community and lead the entire community, as opposed to blame one segment of the community, Latinos, for all the problems. Translated election materials are needed for the same reason literacy tests are illegal. We want all citizens to have a say. Literacy and English are good skills, certainly, but we shouldn't dehumanize citizens by excluding them from our democracy simply because their language skills aren't as strong.
Well, I agree, and I think that's going to segue perfectly into the last question that I wanted to ask you about, and that would be about the dissent that you wrote with regard to the Jimmy Carter, James Baker Commission regarding the photo ID requirement. Tell me about that.
Well, I'll tell you. In terms of the dissent, what's tough about that, Bruce, is that I think it was clear that I was going to dissent, and at the last moment, on the last day, a rule was announced limiting dissent to 250 words, so they wouldn't publish your dissent unless it was 250 words. And so I actually went out and bought a website so I could publish my full 600-word dissent. And as you know, 600 words is only about the length of a newspaper op-ed. But in terms of the substance of my dissent and my take on this, is that, you know, it really does seem reasonable to require a photo ID. Most people think it seems reasonable. Most people have ID. The problem, though, Bruce, is that there are 20 million Americans who don't have a photo ID. That's more people than in Delaware, New Mexico, and 14 other states combined. And this isn't random. You know, it burdens particular communities. For example, in Wisconsin, 23% of senior citizens don't have a photo ID. Also, 78% of young black men ages 18 to 24 don't have a state-issued driver's license. And so on one hand, a lot of people don't have ID. On the other hand, fraud is relatively rare. In Ohio, for example, out of 9 million ballots cast in 2004, only 4 were determined to be fraudulent. So my concern here is that photo ID advocates would essentially throw out the baby simply because the baby has a drop of bath water on the baby. I think we need better tools to deal with that bath water and keep the baby.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, the situation with Georgia right now, it seems like Georgia is really working hard to try to drive the voter rolls back to pre-1960 levels. Well, it amazes me.
Bruce, I think you're right. You know, we've got only 3 states that have a photo ID requirement: Indiana, Missouri, and Georgia. The Georgia law has been already blocked by a federal court as unconstitutional. You know, some people say, we use an ID to get on planes, so we should use one for voting. But really, Bruce, it's apples and oranges in the sense that, you know, it makes sense to exclude 1,000 legitimate flyers who don't have photo ID to stop the one terrorist who's going to blow up the plane. That makes sense. But it doesn't make sense to exclude 1,000 legitimate voters just in the off chance that we'll stop one fraudulent vote. And it doesn't make sense because the very purpose of voting is to ascertain the will of the people and get government of, by, and for the people, and we're moving away from that goal to the extent that we're excluding thousands and really millions of Americans simply because they don't have a photo identification card.
Very quickly, Professor Overton, how can people get your book again?
People can go to stealingdemocracy.com and learn more about the book, Bruce, but you know, there's some also in addition to information about the book and being able to buy the book at stealingdemocracy.com, there are also tools. You can register to vote if you're not registered right now at stealingdemocracy.com. You can update your registration if you've moved. There are other tools to organize and to be active. And, you know, we can't sit around and wait on politicians to fix the system. They'll never do that. We really do need to get involved, and we've tried to put some organizing tools at stealingdemocracy.com for average Americans to get involved.
And there's a number of great, including you have a blog there too.
That's absolutely right.
Man, it's great talking with you again. I really appreciate you taking your time out of your day to join me and explore this issue once again. It's very near and dear to my heart, and I know that your heart is in it as well. And that's what we got to do, is put our heart in. And, you know, because there's a lot of people who shed blood to try to keep this vote free and clear, and it's really a crime when people try to remove it from us.
That's absolutely right, Bruce. And thank you so much for dedicating yourself and your program to these issues.
All right. Professor Spencer Overton of George Washington University Law School and writer of Stealing Democracy, thank you for joining me, and we'll definitely catch up with you down the road.
Thanks a lot.
All right. And you're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 1 minute before the top of the hour. If you would like to get in on the show, you can do that after the news. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. Bruce@BruceBirch.com is my email address. Be a participant in democracy. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. Israel is expanding its ground offensive into southern Lebanon. Heavy bombing has resumed, and Reuters is reporting that Israeli soldiers have landed by helicopter in a northern Lebanese village near the Syrian border. In Iraq, the daily violence continues. A reported 70 people were killed today in and out of Baghdad. The death toll includes an American soldier, a British soldier, and 20 Iraqi troops. In southern Afghanistan, at least two British NATO soldiers were killed today in an ambush. Yesterday, NATO took control of the area from U.S.-led coalition forces. Today, Iran's president officially rejected the U.N. Security Council resolution demanding Tehran abandon uranium enrichment by August 31st. Sanctions have been threatened. Fidel Castro has temporarily and for the first time in his dictatorship ceded power to his younger brother, 75-year-old Raul. The Cuban president, who is 80 himself, is recuperating from surgery. In Miami, anti-Castro Floridians are celebrating. In Asia, for the first time in a year, North and South Korean troops have exchanged heavy gunfire across their fortified border. An excessive heat warning has been issued by the National Weather Service for cities throughout the Midwest and East. U.S. scientists say July may be listed as the warmest since record-keeping began in 1895. In Chicago, hundreds of elderly residents have been evacuated when a power outage shut off cooling systems to more than 200,000 homes. Nearly 60 major wildfires are burning out of control in the West, stretching crews and equipment to the limit. For the first time in 3 years, federal land management agencies are being asked to make more employees available to fight the blazes. A storm warning has been issued for the Caribbean islands for Tropical Storm Chris. A storm watch is out for Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. British Prime Minister Tony Blair and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger today held a press conference to announce an agreement bypassing the Bush administration and working toward reducing global warming. Both the UK and California have suffered through record high temperatures this summer. In southeastern Florida, the state has purchased about 115 square miles of wilderness for environmental conservation. The $350 million deal has been applauded by conservationists. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Paying escalating gas prices has left American consumers with less to spend on other items. That's according to the Commerce Department, who reported weak consumer spending in June for the fourth month in a row. Construction spending reached a higher-than-expected rate, however, mostly due to government contracts. The nation's planned layoffs fell to 37,000 last month, a six-year low. The July figure is 64% lower than planned job cuts this time last year. Northwest Airlines flight attendants rejected a contract cutting pay and benefits by more than 20%. The airline says it's going ahead with the cuts starting today, a move that could trigger a strike. Eastman Kodak is posting a second quarter net loss of $282 million. The company is also eliminating another 2,000 jobs. Verizon Communication is reporting a 26% rise in second quarter revenue, even though profits were down 24%. Today, light sweet crude was $74.91 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and gold was trading at $659.50 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 60 points at 11,125, the NASDAQ down 29 at 2061, S&P 500 down 6 at 1270. You can find more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour, and what an amazing interview that was with Professor Spencer Overton. Now, if you want to go check out his book now, I got to tell you, I've read the book cover to cover. I've read the book cover to cover and have referred back to it a number of times. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. What I would also like to recommend that you do is, I'm just trying to see if I can pull this up or not, is to, if you decide that you want to buy the book, go through headonradionetwork.com and look on the, let's see, is it, it's not there now. Yeah, it is. On the left-hand side of the page, there is an Amazon link, and if you use that link and just search for Stealing Democracy, okay, just search for Stealing Democracy, and that way you can end the author is Professor Spencer Overton. Second time he's been on the radio program, and I love the guy. He's great. He's fantastic. Now, moving right along, we do have a little bit of time for phone calls. I've got another guest coming up at the bottom of the hour at 6:30 on the East Coast. That would be 3:30 West Coast time. And Alan Deckert, who is going to be on, he is the president of an organization called Open Voting the Open Voting Foundation, and it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about voting machines and how the vote can be stolen if it's not manipulated and gerrymandered and twisted out of existence by the politicians themselves using methods through their state governments, then they also have the option of purchasing the vote. This is sounding pretty bad, isn't it? Well, the reality is, folks, that we have to become more aware of these issues and these problems surrounding our vote. We have to. There's no question in my mind but that if we do not try to get a hold of this issue, we may very well give our democracy away and never know that we actually did give it away. We may never realize it because we'll still get up and we'll still go to the polls on election day, and yet our vote itself may count for something completely different than what we originally thought it would go for. And what I mean by that is that changes in election law and changes in election procedures could create a completely different outcome than what you intended when you go there. Okay? I am one, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a rundown on some of the problems we had here in North Carolina that helped bring about the change in the voter law here. We had in North Carolina a number of votes that just disappeared. Poof. Poof. Just like that. Poof. And what happened in North Carolina is there were, for instance, in the last presidential election, we had an election for the seat of the Commissioner of Agriculture. Completely, fairly non-political seat. It was a political race, but a fairly non-political position. I mean, the guy oversees the Department of Agriculture here in the state of North Carolina. Well, his votes or votes for him for the two people who are running, a couple of guys, down in Carteret County. I believe it was Carteret County, one of the counties down on the eastern side of the state there right by the ocean. A huge number of votes were lost. And what it did basically was put this election in a dead heat, and it took forever to try to settle that election. Also here in North Carolina, in Gaston County, which is right beside Charlotte, North Carolina, Gastonia, there were a number of votes that were lost there due to ineptness by county officials. Here in Guilford County, North Carolina, where I live, which is a high point in Greensboro, there were votes that were early voting machines that the votes that people were voting up to a certain number, the vote I think it was up to 36,000, and then the machine started counting backwards. It's just crazy stuff, absolutely crazy stuff. This is these were all these black box voting. These were all these DREs, direct record electronic device. Okay. Here in Guilford County, they did find the vote. Now, I was one of those people that voted, that did the early voting thing. Okay. So what happened was I was not sure for a period of time. Now, of course, this wasn't revealed until after Election Day. But when it came out, you know, I immediately wrote a letter to my congressman, Congressman Brad Miller. I immediately wrote a letter to my state representative and then to my state senator, Kay Hagan and Pricey Harrison. And I said to these folks, I have no idea if my vote counted. That is the most precious thing that any citizen can do in a democracy, is to cast a vote. And if I'm not sure that my vote counted, and if I'm not sure that it went to something worthwhile, then how can I be sure that, you know, that the will of the people is followed? How can I be sure that I actually do live in a democracy? How can I actually be sure that, you know, what you people in Raleigh and in Washington say happens should happen? How can you encourage and be a part of democracy, and on the other hand, you know, allow things like this to happen? Well, what happened here in North Carolina was a groundswell of citizen actions, of citizen activism, okay? And through over the period of a couple of years, there was a voter confidence bill that was created here in North Carolina. And I think it was Joyce McCloy out of Winston-Salem created a coalition. It's called the North Carolina Coalition for Verified Voting. And right now, North Carolina, as of June 22nd, 2006, our elections are a very low risk. Okay? That's according to a new report released by Common Cause. We are also one of the 12 states in the entire country that requires hand-to-eye audits comparing the paper ballots to the digital vote. Isn't that cool? I mean, you know, yeah, this is in the Southeast, folks. This is a very progressive law. You know. Now, okay, let's see. There was an act. Basically, it was signed into law in August 26, 2005. It was the Public Confidence in Elections Law. Now, you can go to ncvoter.net, ncvoter.net, and that will hook you up to all kinds of stuff. For instance, in Buncombe County, Asheville, North Carolina, the largest city in the mountains, May 24th of this year, they voted to reject a staff recommendation to buy touchscreen voting machines. With four of the five members, County Board of Commissioners now, this is the Board of Supervisors, Board of Commissioners, the executives of the county, four of the five members said they don't believe voters would have confidence in the touchscreen voting machines. They had the option of accepting or rejecting the recommendation of County Board of Elections, so they couldn't vote to buy the optical scan machines that they said they prefer. They just rejected the one that they were recommended to do. About 75% of North Carolina's counties, 100 counties in North Carolina, that's about 75 counties, have chosen optical scan voting machines, which allow voters to use paper ballots, and then they scan them. See, the thing about that is that, you know, okay, so you scan the ballot, and, you know, there's going to be waste, okay? There's going to be sometimes it's gonna not going to work well. But you still have the ballot. You still have the piece of paper. You still have the right way to count that vote. It's still there, and it's not given away. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back and do a little preface on the next guest. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program here on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff, did some art projects with the kids,
cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4, and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers, so that becomes an 8, too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
And you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, where we're taking a look at how we record our choices in this democracy. And how we do that is through a number of different ways. First of all, if you're not eliminated from the voter rolls entirely by either being confused with a felon, a dead person, or someone who is voting in a different state, if you make it through all that, and you're actually allowed to vote, perhaps then your vote will get recorded, but then it might get lost. And if it gets lost, then let's hope you have a paper ballot. It's getting to be kind of tricky, isn't it, folks? Let's go over to our phone line. I've got Wayne on line one. Wayne, how are you doing, my friend?
How you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm having a great time today.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, man. I haven't heard a bunch of the show. I just got home, but I guess that's my problem, isn't it? Well, listen, I want you to know the picnic Sunday has started quite a bunch of stuff up here. In
cool.
fact, I think that there are a group of people, mainly Republicans, who would like to remove you from the voter roll if you're registered Democrat.
that is absolutely the truth.
Yes.
And you know, that matter of fact, in a lot of different states, I covered a story earlier in Indiana where the GOP-led elections board is doing just that. So.
Oh, I don't doubt that. I mean, you know, they did that in Ohio also. That, you know, with different means. Like, they don't need any voting machines in that precinct.
You know, exactly.
The same, you know, you get to the same end. So, but there, if you remember when Congressman Ray Hall got up and gave his speech, he mentioned the minimum wage law and said what the Republicans did and called the Republicans evil.
Yes, he did.
Oh my God! I mean, Jesus, the reaction is amazing.
Well, is it all over the newspapers and the radio now?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not going to mention any names, but the other radio is, highly incensed that he would call Republicans evil. Now, this is the same, coming from the same man that called Nick Rahal, a U.S. congressman, a terrorist.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, honest to God, he did.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So,
oh, but he knows about decorum, huh?
Yes, exactly. But for Nick Rahal to call Republicans evil but I think it's wonderful because I think we accomplished exactly what we wanted to do. We need to embolden Democrats. We need
Absolutely.
To embolden them to the point where they don't take any more of this crap from the Republicans and start giving it back to them. Better than they give. I mean,
as my dad used to say, hand their ass to them.
That's exactly right. And I was at a city planning meeting tonight, and a local business reporter was sitting next to me, and he said, "We got about 20 calls from Democrats at the from Republicans at the newspaper that are all." Upset over the article in the newspaper about your picnic where Rahal called the Republicans evil. And I said, well, good. It seems like we've accomplished what we wanted to do. It's getting quite exciting. I think we ought to have a picnic every Sunday.
I was going to say, if you can do that in one Sunday, imagine if you had it once a month, right?
Right. Well, you know, there's people talking about things like that, you know.
Because, you know, the bottom line is that we should not ever shy away from controversy. And if we see something if you see somebody that's quacking and waddling and has a bill, perhaps you need to call it a duck, right?
That's exactly right. That is exactly right, and that's, well, that's what we've started. And I, personally, I'm proud of Congressman Rahal for saying what he said. It needs to be said. What those people, I mean, you know how long Democrats have been trying to pass a minimum wage bill, and then these people all of a sudden pretend like they're ready to go along with it? You know,
yeah.
And then to add all this estate tax, not just estate tax, I mean, there's deductions in there for if you're on a business trip and you bring your wife, you're allowed to deduct all the expenses for bringing your wife also. Yeah.
Well, what I find to be really interesting about it as well is that he, you know, the reason why they're doing it is because they know it won't pass. They know that the Democrats in the Senate will not go along with that inheritance tax repeal, or I guess it's making the inheritance tax cuts permanent. Isn't that right? Isn't that what the bill was?
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's one of the many tax cuts. One of the many, you know.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I think there's another one in there about the oil companies, too, giving oil companies more grants or something. But, you know, it is absolutely repugnant to me that these Republicans cannot do something nice for the people without having a self-interested motivation for it. That's just, it's all about selfishness.
And, you know, you have to keep in mind, too, that we're going into our 10th year without a raise into the minimum wage. And right. In the 9 previous years, these people have voted to give themselves a raise.
Yep.
Now, I mean, just this year, what was it, $3,300? So that they could keep up with the inflation?
Of course.
What do you think about the people that have been working for 9 years for $5.15 an hour? Where do you think they are with inflation?
Well, of course, the free market economy dictates that the market should dictate the rate of pay, and
exactly. And if you give them more money, they'll just buy more beer. You know how that goes. So, anyway, like I said, I think we've started to stir the pot, and I'm enjoying it, to be quite honest with you. And I think we ought to keep on going.
Well, and that's it. What is it? A good friend of mine from New Mexico likes to say, what does he say? Agitate, educate, motivate.
There you go. That's what we have to do. You know,
absolutely.
Things are, you listen to all these pundits and stuff, and they tell you about, you know, well, the way things look right now doesn't look real good for Republicans. But there's still a few months left. You know, it could be turned around. I mean, do these people actually think things are going to get better? You know, the housing thing is about to hit it. You know, its bubble's about ready to burst. You know, the stock market's losing because they're afraid of inflation, which means they're afraid the feds are going to keep raising interest rates, which means people that are on these adjustable mortgages are going to, you know, their rates keep going up every month. And they're going to start losing their homes. And, you know.
Well, I really have a feeling there's
I think the economy's ready to take a very bad hit. And it's not going to be good for anybody. And it certainly isn't going to be good for people running as Republicans. The way I see it, anyway.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. And I think that the economic bubble is not the only one that's going to burst. I think that there has been another false sense of security created. You know, we were on September the, I don't want to get too far into this, but we were sort of living in a bubble for a long time. And finally, our chickens came home to roost with a foreign policy like we have, and have had in the past, where we go around the world and create tin pot dictators and call it democracy. That can't last long.
Right.
You know, and so it is amazing to me.
Screw you, foreign policy.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You know, you have natural resources we need. We're going to suck them up and exploit you in the process, kind of foreign policy.
Exactly. But we'll send you a lot of jobs, you know, $0.14 an hour or whatever they get. So. Anyway, I just wanted to say hey and tell you what's going on here. And they're blaming it all on you. So, you know, I want you to know that. But you got
great
shoulders.
Well, you know something? It makes me feel powerful.
Right, and I want you. Are you emboldened?
As long as they're talking about me, they'll leave everybody else alone, right? Wayne, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, buddy. I'll be talking to you.
All right. Have a great night.
All right. Bye.
Bye. That's our good friend Wayne from the wonderful mountains of West Virginia. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we should have another interviewee on the line. You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program, Radio for a Freer America, right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Day by day. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Today I feel outrage. Today I feel shame. Outrage because how else can any human being with a conscience feel after what Israel just did in Qana, Lebanon, killing 56 people, including 34 children? Did you see the pictures? Did you read the accounts? Enough to turn anyone's stomach and to pierce anyone's heart. This was a war crime, as Human Rights Watch has noted. So today I feel outrage. Today I feel shame. And shame first as a Jew that a nation of Jews would inflict such horrors. Jews who are taught to value justice above all. We survived for 5,700 years so we could do this? And shame second as an American citizen that our government supplies the weapons that killed the innocent in Qana. Shame that our government is correctly seen as an accomplice in Israel's war crimes. Shame that our government inexcusably failed to insist on an immediate ceasefire long before the Israeli bombs fell on Qana. Today I feel outrage. Today I feel shame. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. Quick break there because we have our guest on. And I just, you know, before we get too far there, if you want to participate in the online experience of the Head On Radio Network, head over to headonradionetwork.com and check out our chat room, our message boards, you name it. We got a blog. You can pretty much interact any way you want over there at headonradionetwork.com. And have a great time. Democracy at work. Democracy at work. On the line with me, I have Alan Deckert, who is the president of the Open Voting Foundation, who issued a press release yesterday that I'm going to let him talk about. Alan, welcome to the Bruce Birch radio program.
Glad to be here, Bruce. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're very welcome, and I am going to assume that I pronounced your last name correctly.
You did it right.
Fantastic, fantastic. Tell me about what you guys have found, and tell me about the press release you guys issued yesterday.
Well, we have been looking at the Diebold TS voting machine. We just happened to have access to one.
Okay.
And we're nowhere near completed with our investigations, but we felt that what we found was important enough that we should get that out there right away.
Okay.
And what we found is very odd, in that you would think would not be in any kind of system that has any notion of security. What we found is that there are switches on the system board to allow the system to load various software from various places, depending on how the switches are set. And so, I mean, it looks suspicious at a minimum, in that you could flip one switch and have it boot from one place, which may not be the certified software that it's loading. And one question, for example, that I would like to ask the people that certified this machine is where the switches were set when it was certified. I have a feeling they don't know.
What is the certification process for this type of machine?
Well, that's an interesting question. It is in transition right now. It in the past it has been a really informal process, which was set up by a consortium of state election directors. They decide on who is qualified to be a ITA, Independent Test Authority, and then the companies that want to have a system certified go to one of the designated ITAs and pay them per hour, basically a fee, to get the system certified. That's how it works. I mean, it's one private company paying another private company to say that their systems are okay. All of the process is secret. It's the company that's doing the certification is signing a non-disclosure agreement with the vendor. So it's just, we don't know. We don't have a lot of insight into what how it's done. What we do know is not very good, though.
Now, when it's certified, you may not have the answer for this, but I wanted to ask the question anyway. Is it a particular, like, do they certify a whole batch of machines by checking them randomly, or are they each one individually checked to make sure that it operates the way it's supposed to?
No, they for the most part they're testing a sample. They're
right.
Not.
Okay.
In other words, if you're thinking about this certifying a whole fleet of machines that are in use in a jurisdiction, they don't do that. They're taking a sample machine and then testing that and saying it passes or fails. They don't fail, by the way. In other words, if there's something wrong, they just go back and say, here, we want this improved, and they always pass. They've never failed a machine.
Wow. So actually, now, for all intents and purposes, the company possibly, I'm not saying they have or they could, but they possibly could have, you know, put forth a sampling, like, say, send 20 machines and say, this is representative of 2,000 machines, and then have those 20 certified while the other ones could be programmed to do whatever they want. Is that a possibility?
It's possible, and it's actually happened. In other words, in California, we had systems that were supposedly certified Diebold systems, and then what was actually used in election was a little bit different. They used a variation of the software that was not certified, and they were caught doing that. That was in 2004.
So the particular machine that you've gotten has two different, at least a minimum of two different ways that it could boot.
Right.
It could boot between an EEPROM, which is a read-only memory chip, correct?
Right.
And a flash, would that be a flash card that's inserted into the machine, or?
Right. In the pictures that we released yesterday, there's a long white SIM slot.
Yes, I see it.
Looks like a memory. You could put a memory card in there. It's
right.
80 pins, and that is. Yeah, that's where the external, and it's labeled right on the board. It says external flash memory, and so that's where that external flash would go. And that could be The flash memory is like a solid-state hard drive, in a sense. The machine does not have a hard drive, you know, with a spinning disk. This is memory that is read-write memory.
Correct. Okay.
So that SIM is right there on the board. It's labeled, and you can see clearly you flip that one switch. It's called switch 4. Switch that to the side 1, and then it would boot from the external flash.
Have you been able to actually go into the machine and read what was on the read-only memory card on the machine itself?
Well, we haven't got that far yet, and we plan to do that. We want to get all the contents out of there without destroying it, and then be able to restore it. So that's going to take a little bit of practice to do that. And like I said, our full analysis is not done on this machine, but what we've seen so far is bad enough that we felt we should release at least partial results.
So, essentially, someone could, if a certain code were on the machine automatically through the EEPROM, the read-only memory mm-hmm. chip there, and the code there could also be a whole different boot code written onto the flash chip or card that could be inserted into the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have two very vastly different voting programs going on in the same machine. Isn't that correct?
Right, right. And it's not, you know, the machine as it's set up is simply, and with the certification process as it exists, I mean, basically you're just asked to trust the election authorities and Diebold that it really works. Because there is no there's no way to verify any of this. They, as I said, I'll bet you anything. I mean, the independent test authorities would not even answer probably, but I'll bet you that if you asked the ITA that tested this machine where those switches were set when the system was certified, they would not know. They don't test at that level. They have a checklist that they check from, and if it's not on their list, they didn't check it. You know, and
right.
I'm sure that they don't know. So it's just disturbing that this is there at all, and that us as voters, we are being asked to just blindly trust your election officials and your and the vendor that the thing is right, because we just don't know. And in the reason that's one of the things that we've done. In response to that, is that we have sponsored a bill in California, AB 2097, which would require that all of these technical details be public. I mean, we shouldn't have to kind of surreptitiously examine one of these machines. This should be public information. There's no excuse for any of this to be secret. We've allowed vendors to sort of hijack our voting system. And make it their proprietary secret little profit center, and this should be all public.
Yeah, I was going to say, stumbling across the very fact that two very different programs could be in the same voting machine, and actually, from what I'm reading on your website, a third possible profile,
right,
could be added in minutes.
Sure.
So you're talking about three. Oh God.
And it's even worse than that if that's possible, in that you can, through the flash memory, the PC card, there's actually a PC card that you insert in the PC card slot, just like any laptop has.
Sure.
And that can load the election software. That can load not only the election data, but it can load a completely new system onto the a flash memory as well.
Probably within seconds, I would imagine.
Probably, yes.
So a technician could go through, a technician could visit a county board of elections, go to their warehousing site, and basically do a copy-paste of one selected set of software onto thousands of machines in an afternoon.
Right. Yeah, and you know, we just have to totally trust that they don't do that. We don't have, this stuff is not public, and we are not able to verify any of it.
Now, let me ask you about the bill, that you guys have sponsored.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this a voter verifiable also, or like, for instance, where there would be a printed ballot, et cetera, or is this just to verify that the machines themselves are certified in a certain way?
Right. This particular bill is in California, and we've already passed the voter verified paper requirement here in California. That was SB 1438. We also passed SB 370 last year, which requires, I mean, amazingly, SB 1438 said you have to print this paper trail, but it didn't say what you do with it. And
right.
And the interpretation was that you do nothing with it because the bill doesn't say you do anything with it. So we had to pass another law, SB 370, and that was Deborah Bowen's bill, which requires that that paper trail be used in any routine audit of the system. Mm-hmm. or manual recount. So those are in place. Now, our bill, it has to do with disclosure of the technology with which we're voting. It means that it requires that all of this be made public here in California upon certification, state certification, that the Secretary of State, we talked about the federal certification or national certification. It really doesn't involve the federal government much at this point. It is changing. The federal government is taking a lead role on this, but it's not quite in place yet. But there's another level of certification, namely the state certification. And so what our bill says is that in that process of certifying the system for use in the state, that at that point the Secretary of State would disclose all the details of that system and all of the testing protocols that were used with that system. Now, that bill it passed the Assembly Elections Committee. We're trying to get it restarted in the Senate because it was held in appropriations. Now, it may or may not be passed this year. I mean, if it doesn't, we'll be back next year. But the session ends August 31st. So whether or not we have a month, basically, this month is going to tell whether or not we get this passed in the legislature and onto the governor's desk. We have our work cut out for us.
Well, and it sounds like you're doing a bunch of great work. I mean, you know, thank you for all the work that you're doing, Alan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
But I'm not cutting loose with you yet. I just want, because you guys are working hard now. Do the voting machines, are they also capable of being accessed via Wi-Fi at all or not?
Well, this particular machine does not have Wi-Fi capability, but it has infrared. It has an infrared port on it, and that's you can actually see it on the pictures. It's right next to the place. It says a keypad, and there's a keypad port for accessible voting, you know, to plug in a device that has buttons so a blind person can use it. And right next to that is an infrared port. And basically, it's pretty scary, too. And we haven't determined if that is there software for that or what. But if that's functional, I mean, that's a very scary thing because it means that somebody with a PDA or there's a variety of infrared devices that you could have that, to transfer data to and from that machine through that port. So it's not something, you have to have a line of sight to that port. In other words, you have to be close enough to it to, like you know, your TV remote.
Sure.
You know, it's infrared. So you have to have a line of sight between your TV and the receiver, but if you do, you can send and receive data, and that port is on that machine.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, so that means basically, you know, we were talking about someone coming along with a card. Mm-hmm. Essentially, if what you say about the PDA, about the infrared port is true, I wonder how possible it is for them to copy code onto the read-only chip, you know, just by simply flashing it through some sort of handheld device.
Yeah, we don't know about that infrared port, but it is scary, and we do know that you can send and receive data from there if they have software there that's designed to do that. So it doesn't look like something that should be on a voting machine to me. Somebody could tamper that without even touching it. It doesn't sound right to me.
No, and it makes me wonder. I mean, is there now? You're a guy who's involved in this effort. Do you know of any equipment that they might use that would utilize such a thing?
You know, I don't know, but it is labeled on the machine. It says IRDA, which, you know, stands for infrared, and so it's like they know it's there, and they must have some plan to use it. I don't know. Maybe I should do a little more research to find out. It just seems incredible to me that it's there in the first place, and I don't know if they have if they're using it. I don't know that.
That's very surprising. All right, Alan Deckard, I really appreciate you joining me this afternoon. I've got to start winding the show up, but I really appreciate you joining me, and I want you to stay in touch with me if possible. You know, or I'll stay in touch with you, one of the two, about your progress for this. One last question before I let you go, though.
Sure.
And that is, if you find something really suspect besides the infrared port, mm-hmm.
Besides all the rest, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's hidden in, you know, it's like hidden in plain sight. But if you find something that's suspect other than the infrared port, how do you plan to proceed to get that out in the public or to have it be more thoroughly investigated?
Well, for one thing, we will be doing some demonstrations. Some of them will be filmed, and we will be publishing as we do more of our investigations. We'll be publishing more of our work, and it'll be through our website and through press releases. I put a press release on our website, and somehow it got all over the place. I think we were mentioned on Keith Olbermann last night, and
yeah.
So it just flew all around. So I'm not too worried about distributing it. It gets out there, a lot of people are interested in this. So I think that if you're interested, I can tell you that we're part of. I'm the president of Open Voting Consortium as well as Open Voting Foundation. If your listeners want to go to openvoting.org. That's openvoting.org. They can sign up for our announcements list. There's a little box there. You can just put your email address in there, and you can get announcements and stay up on what we're doing. So if you want to, we'll keep you informed.
Well, I definitely think that's I will definitely go do that myself. Also, I found you through openvotingfoundation.org, so there's another website as well.
Right. Those are two – they're actually two separate organizations, but they have a slightly different purpose. In other words, Open Voting Consortium is able to do the things that I talked about with the politics and the legislation. That is done under Open Voting Consortium. Open Voting Foundation has a narrower kind of non-political purpose. So
sure.
we're trying to focus the research and development with Open Voting Foundation and the political organizing and promotional work with Open Voting Consortium. And by the way,
Alan Peck, uh-huh, go ahead.
Contributions to Open Voting Foundation are tax deductible.
Fantastic.
Whereas they're not tax deductible for Open Voting.
So folks can go right to your website at Open Voting Foundation, and they can donate right from there.
Right.
Fantastic. Alan Deckard, thank you for joining me this afternoon and for keeping us informed on the theft of our democracy.
Yeah, well, let's get it back.
Absolutely.
We're trying to get it back.
We're trying to get it back. Thank you for joining me, and I'll get back with you real soon, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Bruce.
All right.
Bye.
And that was Alan Deckard of the Open Voting Foundation. You can check them out online at openvotingfoundation.org. You can donate to them, and if you want to stay up on what's going on with items such as this, you can go to openvoting.org, which is the Open Voting Consortium that he just talked about. So absolutely do go check that out. They've got a Diebold machine. They're digging into it, and they're finding some things, as he just announced, that sound kind of fishy. The game is afoot. You have been listening today to a number of situations and a number of ways in which our democracy gets tampered with and manipulated and traded and stolen from out from under us. And, you know, I got to tell you, if this doesn't give you reason to get out into the streets and to go and to call your senators and call your congressmen and demand that our elections process be nonpartisan and open and transparent, I don't know what else I could do to get you motivated to do that. You got to. There's no way that we can stand by idly and allow our democracy to be sold to the highest bidder. You've been listening to the Bruce Birch radio program. The program today was produced by our good friend and able producer and fantastic guy, Zach Revich. Thank you so much, Zach, for everything you do. The show was announced and engineered by John Fox. He's the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. I'd like to thank our good friend Gene from Oregon for being our chief blogger and Head On Headlines news ninja. Hi-ya! To Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services, you rock. You keep the bits and bytes flowing. He's our systems analyst. I'd like to also thank our good friend Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for doing all that he does to keep the stream and the archives of this radio program zipping through to find its way onto your computer. And I also want to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millerites. Those guys are building the American dream one nail at a time. And by supporting the programming of this network, they are helping us to steal it back. That's right. Last but not least, I want to thank you, listeners, for joining me one more day for quality programming right here on the Head On Radio Network. And last but not least, folks, it's your democracy, too, and it's not a spectator sport. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. We will see you tomorrow for another brand new show here at the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. We'll see you tomorrow.